Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start with Monday Night Football. All right, can we please quit paying these mediocre quarterbacks like they're franchise quarterbacks? Please. That's my takeaway from Minnesota quarterback Kirk Cousins falling to 0-9 on Monday Night Football last night. Cousins and the Vikings handed Aaron Rodgers and the Packers the NFC North, falling 23-10 at home. Cousins was terrible. He completed half of his 31 passes for 122 yards, one TD, and one interception. Big game, big bust. Kirk Cousins is a fourth-round quarterback. That's what he is. That's what he'll always be. Same as Dak Prescott. Cousins and Dak can quarterback Super Bowl-winning teams. Same as Brad Johnson and Jeff Hostetler. You don't have to be a first-round pick to quarterback a Super Bowl team. Hell, you can be a late pick and develop into Tom Brady or Joe Montana. But you can't develop Kirk Cousins and Dak Prescott into Brady and Montana. It's not going to happen. They're not franchise quarterbacks. They don't have the arm talent, the know-how, or, quite frankly, the balls to be elite. Ooh. They're solid NFL starters, and that's how they should be paid. They're a small cut above Andy Dalton, the longtime starter in Cincinnati, and a small cut below Jimmy Garoppolo and Carson Wentz, young guys with the potential to reach franchise status. But Cousins is being paid $28 million a year by the Vikings. The Washington Redskins wasted two franchise tag seasons and salaries on Cousins, hoping he would turn the corner and prove to be more than a solid starter. Let's stop the madness. I was against Cousins getting paid in Washington, and I didn't like the contract Minnesota gave him. I had the same reservations about Los Angeles' Jared Goff, another overpaid, solid NFL starter. Conventional wisdom says it's smart to waste huge salaries on solid NFL quarterbacks. Why? That money could be spent on great linebackers, terrific linemen, outstanding tight ends, big play safeties, hell, kickers. Why is the escalation of mediocre QB salaries seen as being inevitable as the fall of top running back salaries? Todd Gurley's contract is a cautionary tale. Why isn't Kirk Cousins or Goff's? We act like there's a law that if a quarterback holds his starting position for three or four consecutive years, he must be paid as a franchise quarterback. If a quarterback is the reason you win games, pay him like a franchise player. Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, you can't pay those guys enough. Overpay for Drew Brees and Tom Brady. But that's it. There are six franchise quarterbacks in the NFL. There are three guys, Wentz, Garoppolo, and Deshaun Watson, with a chance to be franchise quarterbacks. Everybody else needs to be paid $15 to $20 million a year and give the extra cash to the Bobby Wagner, Stephon Gilmore's, Travis Kelce's of the world. It beats blowing it on Cousins and Dak. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analysts LeVar Arrington and Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, I'll start with you.
Please do.
Is Kirk Cousins a franchise quarterback?
Yes, he is a franchise quarterback.
Did you watch last night?
Did you?
Yes.
Did you? And did it remind you of something? Did it remind me of Aaron Rodgers when he came to California, both of those games? Oh, it did, kind of. Did it remind me of Tom Brady when he was going against Cincinnati? A little bit, itty-bitty. But I understand they don't have the same equity in a resume, so I'm not going there. But what you're describing as a franchise quarterback, you're actually conflating into Hall of Fame quarterbacks. All of the guys you named are future Hall of Famers or on a trajectory to being a Hall of Famer. But there's another tier, which is between, let's say, an all-pro status or Pro Bowl status and a guy that the franchise can sell hope and hope that they can win with. That is the criteria for a franchise quarterback. So if you look at Kirk Cousins, what is he? The leader of a 10-5 ball club. And you're talking about last night. With one arm behind his back without his top two running backs, he went out there and lost the ball game once again on Monday night. But if you look at Kirk Cousins in totality, he is a guy that you can hang hopes on that he can win and hopefully get you into the postseason and make a run. So for your criteria, Hall of Fame quarterback, then obviously you're not going to respect his body of work, but he is a franchise quarterback.
No, I love your definition.
Okay, appreciate that.
He's a hope quarterback. You're right. Mm. And you don't pay a hope quarterback like a franchise quarterback.
Oh, really? Rich Gannon, late
bloomer? No, no. Mm. He was a franchise quarterback in Oakland.
Not at that age?
I don't care. And again, pay him on hope, but don't pay him like a franchise.
Oh, man.
I'll take it. I'll take it because this is the one instance where I'm going to agree with Jason Whitlock. I'm going to agree with him because I've always believed that the quarterback pay scale has been out of line. Here's the deal. You pay quarterbacks that can elevate your team on the strength of their right arm. You pay those guys that tier one money. So when you talk about Lamar Jackson being in that, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady forever, those guys are worthy. If they can't elevate the team, if they need all the pieces around them to be correct, then you can't pay them $30-plus million. That has always typically been the standard that I've gone. No, because why am I paying you franchise money when you can't elevate the franchise and you need all the assistance?
Elevate it to what level is the conversation? Because outside of Brady.
Last night at home with the division on the line.
Oh, so we're talking about regular season wins.
Well, I'm just talking about doing your job, elevating the team.
Well, we keep putting Brady in the conversation with Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers and others. Those guys have one Super Bowl. And you know why they only have one Super Bowl? Because they don't have all the pieces around them at certain times.
Ooh, Tom Brady didn't always have all the pieces
exactly.
around
them. So if we're going to say franchise quarterback and put Brady's name in it, everybody else is something different. Oh, it got quiet.
No.
What?
No.
Brady?
You changed the definition to winning Super Bowls. Bucky's talking about elevating your team on a consistent basis.
Yes.
And
so,
last night
So we
counts.
Should call it elite. So let's just say the elites. So it's only a handful of elites. The elites are the top 10%. So we'll say the elites. So the Pat Mahomes, that crew. We'll put those guys up there. But there is a group of guys who their contract comes up and we're paying them like they're guys that can elevate that.
He didn't elevate Washington?
No.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he. Thank you. Did y'all remember Washington before Cousins?
He was stabilizing that franchise.
He did. You know what he stabilized?
That's elevated.
He stabilized him as a .500 quarterback. That's what I'm paying for. I'm paying for average.
I'm just telling you, he did stabilize the team.
Okay,
and
that's cool.
While I will say no, he's not a franchise quarterback, I will disagree in saying that he does have the potential to be. I think he does check off a lot of boxes. You can't undervalue, and I know you respect this, you cannot undervalue the character and the leadership of a guy that's in that lead role. Kirk Cousins
checks those. He's a leadership quarterback then, not a franchise.
I'll take a leadership money. I'll take a leadership
It ain't franchise money.
When you look at the money is based upon what the economics of the position is required.
And let's change the
position. Well, but we can't base that off of Kirk Cousins. You got to base that off of what these franchises are paying that position. It's the position that's dictating the money.
And I'm saying we need to look at it differently. Yeah. The position used to pay the running backs the most in the NFL. It doesn't anymore.
That's still a different conversation. You're moving the goalposts and distracting the conversation here. Kirk Cousins has the ability to be a franchise quarterback.
And until he gets there, don't pay him like
one. But the economics of the position says if you have a defense like the Vikings have, and they've gone as far as they've gone in the playoffs before getting him, I made that mistake before, I won't do it again, you still are looking at what possibilities are there for this team by putting him in that position, and they paid for what they thought they were getting. Now, if he isn't that yet, he isn't that yet. But does he have the capabilities? He certainly has the capabilities.
It's just amazing that people forget that the Washington Redskins were 3-13 before Kirk Cousins got there. And he took them all the way to 9.
He got that the same time as RG3.
But he was a backup. He was a backup.
Backup. I'm talking about when he hit the field. Yeah. You want to see the record go? 4 wins, 9 wins, 8 wins.
Average.
It went downhill.
But where are you starting from?
You're just average.
Where are you starting from? You're starting from 3 wins.
Go look at his record against winning teams.
Oh, I know that.
His record against winning teams.
Respect.
His record in spotlight games. 0-9. That's not a franchise guy.
He's an average guy.
Why can't he?
That's
what he is.
That's way too strong.
That's what he is. He's an average guy with a nice personality.
32. There's only 32 jobs out there where you could be a starting quarterback.
Among those 32, he's relatively average.
He falls right there. 16, 17.
He's above the average.
He's not a top 10 quarterback.
He's above the average.
He's not a top 10. He's right in the middle of the pack.
Come on now.
He's average. But we're paying him like this. So the whole thing is the scale is out of whack. Because with the quarterbacks, any quarterback is getting big time money. They're the highest paid guys on the team. We've all sat in locker rooms and we've looked across there and we've seen the average quarterback make more than everybody else. And we know that he's not the reason that the team is winning or losing. And so if teams would just make it like it was at the park, I got first pick. Who do I want? Give me Marcellus. Instead of saying, hey, the quarterback, the guy that takes the snap every play is the most valuable
but that's
guy.
What
it's wrong.
Well, we all know
but
that
you know
why?
You know why? Because all the quarterbacks are on TV talking about how important the quarterback position is.
Everybody talks about how important the quarterbacks
are. No.
Everybody
you
does.
Do. Don't throw everybody into
it. Oh, you're part
of
everybody.
Me and Bucky having a different conversation than the one you are.
No,
oh, the system's this way, so it must be
that's
this way.
That's what he just said. That's what Bucky just said.
No, that's what you're saying.
No.
Me and Bucky are saying, they need to evaluate these guys based off their contribution to the team, because Bucky just made a hell of a point.
Yeah.
Nick Foles making $23 million. Is he the best player?
Right.
Is he the best player in Jacksonville?
It's the economics that's driving the position. You guys are putting it on the player's name. Y'all putting it on the player's name. It's the economics that surrounds the position, and I'm going to stop
Let's talk about those same economics.
Go ahead, take it.
When
we
talk about the cap that has went up $10-plus million each year for the last 6 years, which will justify the money he makes, but what would justify in the court of public opinion will be the numbers. He is the quarterback of a 10-win franchise, possibly 11. He is the fourth-rated quarterback in terms of quarterback passer rating. He is fifth in touchdowns, but he's not top 10. So where do you want to go to show he's not top 10 if his performances and the most important column, win-loss column, shows he's a top 10 quarterback?
Ooh, okay, so I'm
I got
I'm
a computer
great.
Right here.
No, no, I'm great because what's going to happen is their argument is going to flip then when we begin to talk about Dak Prescott, because then everything that you're talking about is with passing yards and quarterback wins all that.
Look
and
at
so
Whitlock,
then
it, not me.
So then it's going to flip because then he is right behind Tom Brady with the wins since 2016 and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
So what happens is when we've made the quarterback out to be the end-all, be-all, we end up overpaying for the position as opposed to evaluating guys strictly on their talent, performance, and production and contribution
that's
to the squad.
That's how it's always been, Bucky.
Yeah. Oh, that doesn't make it right.
Hey, that is how it always
been. That doesn't make it right, though.
Hey, LeVar.
All right, Bucky Kaepernick.
LeVar. Come on. I mean, honest to goodness, we have to go deeper than that's how it's always been. Because let me finish.
Uh-oh,
if we just kept with that's the way it's always been, we wouldn't be on this show.
Not all four of us.
We wouldn't be on this show. Not none of us. So, again, I don't care that that's the way it's always been. What we're having a conversation about is what's right. And to me, if I'm an NFL player in these locker rooms and I'm playing these other positions, and I'm going, damn.
No, you're not.
This dude can keep going out here with this average performance, and he's going to get this major, major pay raise. Nick Foles is going to make 23. I'm going to make $10 million, even though I'm a Pro Bowl, All-Pro.
Sam Bradford made $20 million last year.
I'm sorry. If I'm an NFL player, I'm like,
hold
this
on, is
crazy.
Ezekiel Elliott is making a gang of money and only got
13, 14
this
million.
Year. Hold on, let's go. If I'm in that locker room with Ezekiel, I'm like, you ain't earning that dough this year. If I'm in the locker room with Todd Gurley, who has no games over 100 yards this year, you ain't earning that dough. So why we keep picking at the warts at quarterback
but I'm okay, but
and
I'm
not
okay
the warts
with that
at other positions?
But I'm okay
be
with
real.
That. I'm okay with also holding people to task. Like, look.
Right.
Compensation and production have to match.
And his production actually does.
But
it's just his narrative.
Here's my
fourth in quarterback passer rating.
Okay,
fifth in touchdowns.
So then we're going to whip Jameis up there. Jameis got like 5,000 yards.
He's about to get his money.
I mean, we're going to talk about him being a $30 million
franchise. And he should.
That's the economics of the position.
But the position is driven by those economics.
And whether it's been that way all along or not, it's the NFL's
business. I just want you to understand. America used to have a business model.
Okay.
That
making cars.
That had us in a position. Well, the economics of your position pays you nothing. And so we might as well just keep it that way because these people are valued at a higher rate
than
you.
There are a lot of people
and
that
so,
live that
again,
way.
Again, all I'm saying is with the NFL, if I'm an NFL player that plays any other position, the quarterback, I'm like, why do we keep sending all the money to the quarterbacks? How come more of it can't come
because
our way?
The game
it's the reason Ezekiel Elliott making $14 million. The reason why he's not catching much, he's making $14 million. If they were paying him $35 like they're about to pay Dak, he would be catching major
and he would have to justify that by touching the ball every single play, which he can never do at his position. Most important position and a position that, let's be real, we've all played different positions in the locker room. You can focus singularly on just your position and ball out in the NFL, except one, and it's quarterback. Everybody else, if you're a D-tackle, man, what they doing back in the back end?
I don't even know.
What a quarterback has to know? All 11 guys, including himself, and then he has to know what the defense is doing in disguise and then projecting that to what it's going to be in reality. Come on, man.
That's his job description.
That ain't a job around.
Tony Gonzalez is back. We're joined now by Fox NFL analyst Michael Vick. All right, let's move to Chicago, where the Chiefs dominated the Bears yesterday, 26-3. And Patrick Mahomes did a little trolling, celebrating one of his two touchdown passes by counting to 10, the number he was drafted at. But even more impressive than Mahomes was the Chiefs' defense, which hasn't given up a touchdown in the last nine quarters. Kansas City has now won five straight. And during that run, they're actually playing on par with the AFC's top seed, the Ravens, with KC's defense actually outplaying Baltimore in that span. All right, anybody here think the Chiefs are as good as the Ravens?
No. As good? No. Player for player, talent for talent, squad for squad? No. But we just saw last night with the Dallas Cowboys that being the better team doesn't mean that you're going to win the game. So, yeah, I think they could go out there and snipe the Ravens in the playoffs. But they're not as good as the Ravens right now because as much as the defense has improved, they haven't seen that same growth offensively. And if you look at even last night where they scored 26 points, few games, 27 and under, that's been kind of their ceiling, as we talked about with Buffalo, and their ceiling being 17 points. So not the same offense as before, but a much better defense, as we came on this show and said in our projections. If they can get a top 10 defense, they're going to be special. And as we look right now, they're seventh in scoring defense, ahead of the 49ers. That's some trivia you can win at any sports bar, saying which defense is better, 49ers or the Chiefs. Right now, it's the Chiefs. So if you look at them since week 11, they've been just on a tear defensively. So not as good, but can certainly beat them.
I would say no. As of right now, the Chiefs have made some strides defensively, and I think that's where they have to get better, and they're showing that they're getting better versus the run. You look at the Baltimore Ravens and what they're able to do. I mean, consistently all throughout the year from week one to week 16, they've just been the top team in the NFL, better than most. But I still think on the offensive side of the ball for the Kansas City Chiefs, they can compete with any defense that they might see in the playoffs, and that's going to be some of the best. So, you know, with Harmon and Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins, the speed, and then Patrick Mahomes being able to attack any area of the field, they can compete. But as of right now, being the best team or being able to compete with the Ravens or being better than the Ravens, I can't really say right now, but, you know, still got a long way to go.
Yeah, I'm going with the Chiefs. I do. I think right now it's all about hot. They are hot. They are going to hit the playoffs running right now. They're that team, and it was all because of the defense. We look at them, Tyrone Mathieu, Chris Jones. And Frank Clark is finally playing like that $100 million guy. He wasn't playing like at the beginning of the season, but now he is. And now you bring over Terrell Suggs, who you can say he's old, but that guy emotionally has the experience. I think he adds an added element. And he played for the Baltimore Ravens too now. So I'm not saying he probably knows a little bit about what they do. He can help once this game does happen, which I hope does happen. And with the running back going down for the Baltimore Ravens, I don't know how severe that injury is.
He'll be back for the playoffs.
Is he going to be back, though? Because
with a calf?
That's tough.
I've had a calf injury.
That is tough. It's tough to be the guy you were before.
Yeah.
And he is a huge part of that team. That running aspect helps Lamar do what he's able to do. And I think scoring-wise, Andy Reid is an offensive genius. You give him time, he is going to put up some points. He saw it last year in the playoffs when they went against the world champions, the New England Patriots. They won that game. If the guy didn't line up in the backfield, they won that game. It was over. I think this team, over the last 3 or 4 weeks, I'm going to say they're probably the best team in the NFL to me right now.
Chiefs.
I like them. That's a mouthful, Tony. I'm going to somewhat.
It's also my heart, too. Come on now.
I'm going to somewhat go there with you. I'm going to somewhere go there with you. I do think the Chiefs, and this is a change for me because Damian Williams came back. The Chiefs ran the ball better last night. I do think the Chiefs are as good as the Ravens. And over the next 3 or 4 years, I think I'll be proving out that they're as good as the Ravens. This year, though, the Ravens have an element that's just, it destroys all close races, and it's Lamar Jackson. The Cleveland Browns were playing a hell of a football game the first half until the last 3 minutes. And this dude pulled magic. I mean, it was incredible.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. Yeah. No timeouts. And the whole knock on him from people, oh, if they ever get behind, you can't run that offense. And this, there was only one touchdown, but they were behind, no timeouts, and this dude scored two touchdowns like it was nothing. That's the difference between them and the Chiefs. Last year, Patrick Mahomes had that magic. This year, that magic is with Lamar Jackson, and that's the difference between these two teams. I think the Chiefs probably have a better defense. They certainly, in my opinion, have better weapons with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce than Baltimore has, but they don't have Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, talking about the Chiefs, even the question, as good as, it puts you into a mindset where you're thinking about maybe there's a tie, maybe there's a participation trophy, because in sports, it's better or worse. Somebody wins, someone loses, zero sum. Are the Chiefs better than the Ravens? Because if you're not, you're going to have to outplay them, because you're not going to out-talent them. You're going to have to outperform them. And that's going to be the conversation. When Andy Reid comes into question, everyone always says postseason Andy Reid, not exactly the same as regular season Andy Reid. How is that going to come into play when you got a John Harbaugh out there who has led his team before? So it's just a different conversation in terms of the talent. I think you give a slight edge to the Ravens. And then the execution postseason, you probably still have to lean that way. So how did the
Chiefs think Baltimore has more talent than the Chiefs?
Yeah, I would have to say. I wouldn't say necessarily like
they got the
combine measure.
They got the quarterback.
Running, I would give them the running game. I wouldn't give them the receivers. None of that. But then I go defensively, the secondary, I have to go to the Chiefs. I mean, to the Ravens. And then probably linebackers to the Ravens, yeah. And then up front, you might say a draw. So that's why I say it's so close, but as good as makes you think you're going to tie. You don't have to be in range. You have to be better. You have to trump them. Can they do that?
Yeah, when we talk about this discussion and you look at how the Chiefs have progressed over the last couple weeks, you can't help but to notice what they've done on defense. And we thought that would be the biggest reason why they wouldn't probably go as far in the playoffs. And now with Patrick Mahomes being at the top of his game still, I don't think he never lost. He had an injury. Mm-hmm. But them being able to score points and be efficient on offense, and then the defense backing them up, you know, they've been the biggest, toughest. They've been the toughest test for the Baltimore Ravens for the last 2 years, and you know that could come into play come playoffs, and that's what's going to make it so interesting.
Why are we? I like Lamar. He's the MVP of the season. But come on, Patrick Mahomes. We're acting like he's like Lamar is here and Patrick's way down.
This year.
Let's see when this comes. I'm telling you.
This year.
Yeah. Patrick has been hurt a little bit. Lamar has outplayed him. I'm not saying he.
Okay. And the Chiefs did beat him, though. The Chiefs beat the Ravens.
Remember Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. Every time that this is going to be that for the next 10 years. Absolutely. This is going to be the top two quarterbacks. We're going to love watching this. It's starting to get good. Yeah. And I think you're going to have to – Patrick's going to fluctuate. Lamar's going to fluctuate. If Patrick gets hot, and we've seen it, what happened last year, this could easily happen. Three touchdowns last night, zero picks. It's coming. Mm-hmm. It's coming. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, that if they start peaking, I know he's MVP, but when we get to the playoffs, you can scratch all that and let's see him – two MVPs going at it.
Joined again by Doug Gottlieb and T.J. Houston's out of time now for the most fearless discussion of the day. All right, yesterday – 2 hours before tip-off of the Clippers-Lakers Christmas showdown, LeBron James's Twitter feed announced that LeBron's 5-year-old daughter, Zuri James, would launch a YouTube page, All Things Zuri. The tweet stated, "She needs no introduction to the world, but I'm excited for all you to meet my princess, Zuri Nova, through her eyes. All Things Zuri coming soon. Subscribe." The tweet linked to an introductory commercial with James's daughter explaining her show. Take a look.
Hey guys, my name is Zuri James. Welcome to All Things Zuri. I'm excited to share my world with you. My mom and dad are so cool. You might know them. And I have two brothers named Brody and Bryce. And I have a friend bulldog named Indigo. But I have a lot going on.
right, LeBron and I have divergent views on fame. He loves it. I hate it. He clearly believes there's a great benefit to fame. That's why he's giving the gift of fame to all of his kids. I think it's reckless and irresponsible. Why invite strangers into the world of a five-year-old or any child? LeBron's kids are not strapped for cash. This isn't Joe Jackson working factory jobs in Gary, Indiana, and managing his kid's singing career in his spare time. The future Jackson 5 lived in a two-bedroom home in one of the poorest cities in America. This isn't even LeVar Ball training his three boys in a backyard in Chino Hills. Hell, this ain't Kim Kardashian befriending Paris Hilton and leaking a sex tape. You know what this is? It's the real-life Truman Show. You know the movie the actor Jim Carrey starred in as the unwitting character in a reality show. LeBron is the producer of his own Truman Show. It's sad. LeBron is worth $500 million. He's athletic royalty. His kids were set for life at birth. They can aspire to be far more than famous. Fame is fleeting and high risk. History is littered with stories of children ruined by fame. Michael Jackson, Macaulay Culkin, Will Smith wanted his kids to be famous. Fame is a heavy burden for a well-adjusted adult. It can be lethal for kids and ungrounded adults. In my opinion, fame is a status sought by the insecure. Thanks to his basketball talent, LeBron has had so much financial success that I don't think he's ever addressed the foundational emotional issues derived from his dysfunctional childhood. He's the Donald Trump of basketball. Fame, particularly social media fame, makes LeBron feel good about himself, so he's giving it to his kids. Mm. All right, before we dive fully into LeBron, I just want to start with, do we think fame is a good or bad thing?
I think fame's a great thing. I think fame is a light that shines on whatever you want to put under it. And the real issue people have is what's under that light, not necessarily the light that is shined on it. So fame can just give an engine to whatever that is. And that engine can be too much power for you, or it could be just what you need to fuel you to whatever your goals are. So I don't blame the light. I don't blame fame. I blame those people in that situation who don't have the proper guidance, proper character, proper development. And that comes from a village. That doesn't come from that individual just in that light. So just in short, answering that question, I love fame.
It's dangerous. It's really dangerous. I do think it's a valuable thing to have, at least in our profession, right? You don't want to walk into a room and no one knows who you are.
I would. I'd love it.
Yeah, but I don't think, I don't, no, I don't.
It wouldn't be telling on this show then.
No, listen, your commentary wouldn't resonate. You'd just be an outspoken guy that says stuff.
Well, I want to be famous during these 90 minutes.
Right. So there's an appropriate
the
level
other
of fame.
22 minutes. The hour.
Yeah, I get you.
I think fame is dangerous because go to any stadium when they flash the camera around, the red light is on. People act out of their minds, right? And you don't want a child trying to process life is hard enough, and I'm the child of one of the biggest sports superstars we've ever seen, and all of a sudden also have to process life while being under the spotlight of a camera. I think it's very, very difficult. I do think that it has its value. I mean, it's given us everything that we have, at least given me personally, everything that I've had after a very average college basketball playing career, but I think it's a very dangerous thing because we have a tendency to lose ourselves within it and lose sight of what reality is. Reality on TV is not reality in real life. And when you watch the Kardashians and how they can just go and get whatever they want and do whatever they want, that's not real life. Maybe the James gang, it doesn't apply to them so they can be like the Kardashians. I think it has value, but it is a very dangerous thing.
I believe fame is a great thing. It's actually not a good thing if you're grounded and it's handled and channeled the right way. And when you're a child, you have to have parents that can kind of guide you through it and try to take away the missteps that are going to happen. When you're an adult, and I'll give a story, and I'll never forget this. It was my rookie year in the league, and we go to a mall in Cincinnati. It's myself, it's Chad, it's Peter Warwick, it's Ron Dugan. So we're walking through Tri-County Mall in Cincinnati.
Chad is Chad Johnson.
Chad Johnson. Yep. And so everybody comes up to Peter Warwick. Like me, Chad, and Ron Dugans, we just standing. They want pictures. They want autographs. They're like, y'all play? We're like, yeah. They ain't want nothing from us. Mm. And so later on, me and Chad are talking like, damn. They don't even know who we are.
That's nice.
And so when you're in that situation, you want to be acknowledged. You want that acknowledgement from what you do. And so when you finally get it, you have to, as long as it's handled the right way.
Yeah, but like any vehicle.
But like that's like people say like, yeah, but I take drugs, but I handle it the right way. I do, you know, it's like
No.
Famous a drug. Okay, it is a...
No, it's a substance that is not necessarily
completely different.
Yeah, it doesn't have the physiological impact that a drug does.
It doesn't?
No.
It doesn't make you feel good? If you walk into a restaurant, okay? No. You walk into a restaurant with your family, and no one can get a table.
Yeah.
And they go like, Marcellus Wiley? Blah, 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 blah. Right this way, sir.
Yeah.
And you're walking through, and you're thinking about where you grew up and where you are now.
Right.
Like, that is an amazing feeling.
I think it works just like people would say about social media, that like button and all
that.
Oh,
yeah, the dopamine effect.
Yes.
Yeah,
and that's fame.
Yeah, but that is still minor, and that is still a choice. I've been around real famous people. I'm not famous. When I'm around Kobe.
Stop it.
No.
Kobe is a different
There's
level
levels of fame.
Okay,
of fame.
I agree.
There's levels.
Thank you.
I agree.
Denzel. Tom Cruise, and when you see when you see these people in their normal day-to-day lives who are not on TMZ, who are not living that life of fame, but they're famous. But guess what? Fame can be turned off easily. I see it on the daily because I'm a native, and my son goes to school with some super famous people, billionaires and all that. And you know what? They're normal. They're at drop-off. They're at pickup. No one's chasing with cameras because they don't elect to use their fame in that direction. So it is a part of your election. You take a drug, you don't have a choice. The drug is taking you where it's supposed to go. Fame, you don't have to run with the fame. You don't have to chase your fame.
I it's been a narrative of mine on the show for, I don't like fame. I think it does delude you. I think that people fall in love with it and then chase fame and change their behavior and depart from who they were raised to be in pursuit of fame. And so for me, I just don't see fame as any sort of positive. I respect celebrities who try to protect or control their level of fame and try not to let fame take them off in a path. But I've just seen so many people, in my view, crushed by fame or deluded by fame, unable to express any self-awareness because of their fame.
But then there's also the opposite side of that, people that are really famous, they use their platform to benefit others. And so as long as it's channeled in you, and you can help people, you can try to help. I mean, you look at LeBron, the school he started, there's people that has been
school,
his favorite.
The state of Ohio started and he contributed to. Go
but ahead. If he didn't
yes,
get behind
he didn't
it,
get behind
it's
it,
not
it
a school.
I mean, like, right. Look, I agree with you. He's not sitting there shelling out and doing everything, but he does use his platform for good, okay? But this is, and I know I'm getting ahead of ourselves with the discussion.
Well, let's just go there. Do we like LeBron launching a YouTube channel for his 5-year-old daughter?
Love it. Let me tell you, one of the greatest goals of every parent is that your kids can do better than you, can do it better than you did it, whatever those things are. So in totality and even in just day-to-day steps, you want that. And LeBron is fulfilling that goal. Let's be real about who LeBron is. He's a child star who wasn't allowed to capitalize on his success early because of the times. He was ahead of his times. Be real. LeBron's on ESPN. LeBron is already getting
LeBron's
this.
LeBron's driving a Hummer and well taken care of as a child.
And based on his value at that time, he was getting played.
But he was well taken
That's
care
my
of.
Point. Yeah. So LeBron is now sitting there like, hey, I was at 16 and I got this much. But now I know what that really looks like in terms of what I can do with platform and amplify that. So here's the example. Y'all have ever seen Ryan Toy's review on YouTube?
Bruh.
That 8-year-old dude that's making $26 million a year. And let me tell you why that's important. Because in today's times, this is the same world where Toys R Us's are going out of business left and right. But then there's someone who's capitalizing on that same marketplace by doing it this way. LeBron has come to the calculation, my children can maximize who they are by letting them have their brand and platform be exposed. Now, as long as he continues to be the father he is and guide and control them in these situations till they get to their own level of understanding, this is a beautiful thing.
I like it, and I have no problem with it. I have a 7-year-old daughter. I have a 5-year-old son. They're on YouTube a lot. This is what's happening. This new generation. It's YouTube.
They watch.
It's social media. Yep. LeBron is building a family empire.
Yeah.
And that's okay as long as they can get their kids to understand these are things that could, let's not go down this road. We're going to stay down this road. We're going to try to shield you away from certain things. On YouTube, you can disable comments. On social media, you can disable comments.
Will Smith and Jada did.
And people that have made mistakes, you hopefully try to learn from those so you don't make those mistakes.
His kids, were they happy?
It was completely different. Joe Jackson needed the money. LeBron doesn't need the money. The Ryan Toy review. He's making more than 90% of guys in the NBA.
I don't think wealth equates to happiness.
I think it's really dangerous. I just do. I don't think it's a great idea. And look, she's adorable, and I'm sure the content will be adorable. I will. It'll be totally inoffensive, and it'll be LeBron and his wife portraying themselves as the perfect American family. And there's nothing wrong with the perfect American African-American family in Los Angeles coming from nothing and making it. It's just, you know, again, it's just a super dangerous thing. I have twin daughters that are 13 years old. And I'm telling you, the moment we give them Instagram was the moment they suddenly became happy and unhappy because you see your friends doing stuff that you had FOMO, right? You move from Connecticut, you see them getting together, your new friends, you think of your friends, they're hanging out with other friends. YouTube obviously is different, and I do understand the family empire, but the empire is already built.
No, it's not built.
You can always add on and continue to build.
You always think that poor only can become rich. How about rich become richer?
Of course.
How about the Walton family saying in there, we're the richest empire because we shared it within our own family.
I get it, but I just,
what's the win?
Not everyone defines themselves by their paycheck and by how much money they acquire. There are just as many unhappy, unhealthy, unadjusted, super wealthy people as there are the working poor, the working class.
So why
people.
Be broke if but you're going to get the same?
You're not going to be broke.
Hold on. Broke is not just the fact that what we have is what have I contributed to our growth. What if the little girl said, Daddy, I want to do X?
She's 5 years old.
And guess what? You old. Support at 5 years old. Do you have a 5-year-old? I got a 4-year-old.
So look, this is what happens.
They know what they like.
She sees how involved he is with his sons. So he wants to... Oh, I want to do that. So as a father, you're going to do...
I can, but you can't
we all
give
want our
kids
everything. To be successful.
You can't give them everything
we
they want.
We all want them to be successful.
I want to go back to Marcellus' original
point. That's a great point, by the way.
You can't give kids everything they want, but Marcellus made the point about parents want to see their kids do it better than they did, and whatever that it is. And so LeBron's it is fame and being in the public spotlight. My father's was running a nightclub in the inner city and being very popular with women. My mother was a factory worker. And again, my parents wanted me and my brother to do something far more meaningful and significant and more pleasing than being a factory worker or running a nightclub in the inner city. There are people out here, and LeBron's not one of them, and maybe you guys aren't one of them. There is far more significant things to aspire to than being famous.
Hold on. LeBron's it is not fame. It's not getting exploited at this age. First of all, his kids are already in a position where they're not going to be normalized.
You're raising your kids not to be exploited? That's the goal?
Hold on. That's not the goal. That is the medium in which they're going to use. YouTube is not our goal. When you get filmed, do you understand that that is a one-way transmission, me to you, and then you're just recording this? Those cameras don't come with poisons. Those cameras don't come with the issues. You can't actually protect the kid from social media. Bronny James was not on Instagram until he was at a certain age.
Last year.
He protected him because he knew. Why don't we respect fully that LeBron is actually doing this with a calculated response instead of just, hey,
well, I want all y'all to have you seen LeBron's son do an interview?
Have you seen LeBron?
Has LeBron been in trouble?
Let's start with Bronny. He has done a great job with Bronny in terms of his dad's acting crazy at games and high-fiving dudes.
Dad.
That's not what dads do.
You know what's funny?
Yes, I coach games.
Because he's LeBron,
I coach games. I'm at my son's games.
Yeah. And there are dads.
Moms are worse than dads, by the way.
Uncles are the worst, but let's not go there.
But he has done a great, like, Bronny somehow handles it. Like, they go to Dallas, he barely plays, he doesn't pout. They go to Cleveland. When a couple kids are out, he plays well. Okay, but he has done a good job. But if you don't think that fame is fueling LeBron, why is he acting like an uncle when he's at these games? He loves the attention, loves it, and he assumes that his daughter loves the attention as well.
It's called support.
Man. That's not support.
Well, again, I'll just say this: there's a lot. Look, man, my family, we love soul food, and I had a lot of support in getting to the
That's
soul
innately
food table.
Bad for you.
No. Trust me. And so is Faye.
No, it's
and so is Faye.
It's a
and
drug.
So is putting,
it
putting
is
your
a,
life
it is
out
a
there.
Drug.
Putting a five-year-old's life out there to be watched and to entertain a bunch of strangers. I'm just sorry. This Joe Jackson did it to Michael Jackson.
That's a dated model, man.
You can't control who watches it.
We got to change the old lens.
New generation.
It's a new generation, yes. A new generation of guys that are watching on YouTube. You can't control who watches that.
My mother loves saying this, and the Bible teaches this, and the history of the world teaches. There's nothing new but the doers. Everything that we think is brand new, it's not. It's already been done. Go study the history of Egypt and how technologically advanced they were and how they were able to build pyramids and things that we still can't do now. There's nothing new here.
Really?
There's nothing new.
Well, let's just not pick five names and say those failed and the other 50 that are nameless that are succeeding by the same thing.
You don't think it's dangerous
at
all?
Nope.
Whitlock and Wiley, Doug Gottlieb is back. We're joined now by Fox College football analyst Matt Leinart. All right, let's move to this weekend's playoff, where we'll see matchups between huge programs and players, with Jalen Hurts in Oklahoma taking on Heisman winner Joe Burrow in LSU, while Trevor Lawrence and the defending champions Clemson face off against Chase Young and Ohio State. The playoff was supposed to solve all of college football's problems. Now Yahoo Sports says this year could be very problematic, with a 16-day layoff between the semifinal and the national title game that could diminish interest. Listen, I'm a huge college football fan. I don't like the playoffs. I'd never liked the playoffs. Mm. I had to remind myself this morning that the playoff games were even this Saturday. Mm. I wanted to throw out the question, has the college football playoff been a success?
I think it's been a tremendous success, especially during the regular season. You pay attention more. Right. When you see the losses in the regular season, whatever that may be, an Alabama game, you know where to apply that in terms of the college football playoff structure. Before those losses, it was too vague. Which bowl are they going to go to now? So you wouldn't even feel the same
How
impact.
How would affect the rankings?
Yeah. But the rankings wasn't always directly correlated to the bowl structure. But now you have that. And more importantly, here's the best example. This year,
right,
there are three teams that are 13-0, undefeated. So in your system, guess what would have happened? One of those teams, Clemson, the defending national champions with Trevor Lawrence, would not have been in the national championship game.
Are you BCS guy?
I didn't like any of it. I like the bowl system.
Right.
College football was perfectly fine. The most powerful regular season in all of sports.
Mm.
It didn't need all these extra games. These teams playing 14, 15 games.
Starting game four, it was powerful.
And here we are 24 hours before the playoffs, and there's no real buzz and hype around it. I just don't think it's been a success.
I think the playoff, I played in the BCS era. We won BCS championship. We also got left out of the BCS in 2003. We ended up sharing a title with LSU, but the BCS left us out. I think I've always been a fan of college football, and the more the merrier, and the more opportunity. And the playoff has given more teams opportunity to get in. And I know the SEC has been very dominant. I get that. The Pac-12 has been left out the last couple of years, but it at least opens a door for all of these conferences to have a seat at the dance. And then what happens, you know, you got to go out and take care of business. And I think to this year especially, the storylines, and I just disagree. I think the storylines, you have a Heisman winner, you have Fields, you have all the Heisman finalists playing in these games. You have a defending national champ who no one's respecting, that I think, and you know, Doug and I talked about earlier, I think they might be the best team in college football. You have Ohio State, who's loaded. I mean, it's a fun matchup. And then you talk about the layoff. I think this year the scheduling and the calendar year it was kind of a quirky year that there's a 16-day. The NFL does the same thing. I mean, NFL and college are different, but the conference championship game to the Super Bowl is 14 days. And we don't complain about the layoff on that. So I think the buzz is real. I think these teams are phenomenal. And I think the storylines and the players, I think it's awesome.
Some of the flaws in it are within its control. Some of it are without its control.
Right.
You know, half the country, with SC not being any good, half the country doesn't care. right? You can't make people in the West Coast care about Clemson and Alabama and schools in the Southeast. It becomes very, very regional. So that's out of their control. Not having a set date. College football used to be January 1st.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You'd sit down and you wouldn't move.
Yep.
And we lost that. They gave it away. They said, it's okay. We'll give it away so we can create a real national champion instead of a fictional. And that was the big mistake that they made.
Well,
I don't actually think that the system itself, the system is flawed, mm-hmm. right? Because it used to have the most powerful regular season. Now it kind of does and it kind of doesn't. You win your conference, you might have a chance, but you might not. It depends on what conference you win.
Well, that's why I think we should expand. I always think there's expansion, okay, which I know a lot.
No, but there's flaws to that, too.
There's
right?
flaws in any system.
Agreed.
That's why they shouldn't have left it alone. It was perfectly fine.
Well, no, you guys.
Or just do a plus one, right? Just add one game. And, hey, we need one more game. We'll have one more game. Instead, we have, like, the seeds leading up that show. That's a waste of time. Nobody cares. All that stuff. But they had the 1st of January. The 1st of January is college
football. But you know why they don't have it? It's not so much they gave it up. It's the Rose Bowl got extended with ESPN, which was supposed to be about the greater structure. But then that turned into the Rose Bowl having, as they say, separate initiatives. Now, some people within the structure of college football playoffs saying the Rose Bowl is in the way. But they have their deal. The Sugar Bowl has their deal. And they're saying, look, if you don't give us the semifinal games, then we're going to have some issues. So the Rose Bowl extended it into the mid-2020s.
Because they've done it for 100 years.
Right, but they also got away from it early 2000s when they start. Michigan and Nebraska was the first game. Like, Miami, Nebraska. That's when the Rose Bowl started to do so. It's boring, the details, but basically it's complicated within. But this is all going to iron itself out. But right now, I'm excited. Three transfers are playing in the college football playoffs. We're Heisman finalists. This is great.
The playoffs averaged 25 million viewers last year. That was like the third or fourth highest show behind NFL playoffs. The college football playoff, the title game has averaged 29 million viewers in the last 3 or 4 years. People watch. People like it.
No, that's not the question. The question wasn't that people watched, because people would watch and people would like it if you had the bowl system as well, especially when you had the right bowl match.
You played in the highest.
You played the highest ranked game. That was in the BCS. That was rated higher.
So I like the playoff system because it gives more teams opportunity to win.
Does it?
It does, absolutely.
I mean, that's
why out of the SEC, but it gives more opportunity.
Who's won the national championship last year? ACC, Clemson.
Well, but mm-hmm. let's
Alabama's Florida, not even
and,
in the
and
in
Florida
the playoffs.
State's won it as well. But let's also point out the number one seed hasn't won it. Now, maybe that means they're overrated, but also
that's why I think it's great. You never know. And I think this year, to Marcellus's point, this year. I'm telling you, these top four teams.
Y'all don't even remember.
It is amazing, though, right? Like, he's old enough to remember, but you played it.
Hey, I played it.
You didn't really split a national championship.
No, but I won a tie. Oh, four, we won a
you
championship.
You want co-champions again?
No.
You want to go back to co-champions?
No, but that one you weren't really co-champions. Awesome.
Co-champions? Both teams celebrated.
We were AP national champions.
No. You have a ring to the AP?
I do.
Okay.
No. I got a ring and a trophy.
I'm just telling y'all.
I don't like it.
College football was unique from the NFL. And the more they try to, let's do a playoff and make it like the NFL, the more it diminishes
itself. They're
not
trying to make it like the NFL.
Well, I don't care. They're trying to do it like everybody
else. College basketball. That's
like everybody. And college basketball, regular season is a joke and has been destroyed.
Correct.
And now the NCAA tournament ain't what it used to be either. So this whole little, you got to have a playoff for sports to be special and blah, blah. No, college football, other than the NFL, was the greatest thing going. It's regular season. I'm going all the way back to Archie Griffin and O.J. Simpson.
I wasn't even born then.
It was awesome.
And
what? The Joe Paterno cried because his team didn't get ranked number one. That was awesome, too, arguing about who got robbed and who should have been number one. Mm. And all this stuff of like, we need a playoff and it's going to make it so magical. It hasn't materialized. You know what's bigger than those games Saturday? Antonio Brown working out for the Saints. Mm-mm. It gets smothered by the damn NFL.
No. It does get smothered.
There's more interest in the NFL's Week 17 and their playoffs, and they should be playing on January 1.
I agree.
And we'd all be sitting around talking about how great college football is.
That's the hurdle. Listen,
when Archie Griffin played, man, they didn't have social media. They didn't have every dang thing, being covered by the media. So it's a different world we live in.
Yeah, and you know what social media does? It distorts the truth. And so you're right. The truth of how great those Ohio State teams were with Archie Griffin didn't get distorted by social media and make everybody convinced that, oh, my God, if he doesn't play Alabama, how can we respect
Archie Griffin? They played the milkman. They had the milkman out there with their accountants. The real lineman on my face.
The good is, I think the good is that teams are scheduling up more in the non-conference more than they used
to. You have
right?
to.
You have to in order to get respect, okay?
Right. Yep.
The bad is that it does diminish the value. Ohio State sneaking its way in a couple years ago with a third-string quarterback end up winning a national championship as opposed to teams that do it the entire year, don't lose a game. But I think the big thing is giving away the 1st of January was a colossal mistake.
Yep.
And if you want a remedy thing, forget adding teams, subtracting teams. Dominate that day because that's the day which we all go, January 1st,
right.
College football. That's it.